And welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of The Horror at Camp Jelly Jam. That's not W-H-O-R-E, that's H-O-R-R-O-R, horror. By R.L. Stein on Dune Reads Goosebumps. This has been requested numerous times, most recently by Danielle. This is recorded on Memorial Day weekend, so if you're, you know, a soldier, you know, and you're one of the, or in the Navy, or the Marines, or the Coast Guard, or you wear right guard, you know, keep doing your thing, because, yeah, I couldn't do it, but, you know, I'm not capable of that sort of thing. I don't want to kill anyone. So I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I was born in 86, and my mom wouldn't let me have G.I. Joes, and everyone had G.I. Joes, so I had a bunch of Ninja Turtles and all the, you know, the Marvel figures and that sort of thing, and now I have a whole wall of goddamn Star Trek figures, and, but I never had G.I. Joes. My mom wouldn't let me have them, and this and that, and I was like, what the hell? And she was like, I don't want to encourage war, and they're pretty right-wing, but I don't know. I guess it makes sense to not make a game out of war, but anyway, So I never had them growing up, and I was like, that was fucking bullshit, what the hell, blah, blah, blah. And then that hit me, and I'm like, I'm 26, and I've never been in a fight. I have no aggression in me whatsoever, and I'm always drunk and always mouthy. You know, I talk constantly and so much shit, but no one's ever just taken the time to hit me for it. So, point is, if you are capable of doing that shit, glad you're doing it for the old US of A, rather than, you know, just out there killing hookers so you can come. That being said, this book has the iconic cover of the camp counselor with his pants up to almost his nipples and his giant mouth looking almost like Slappy from the old Return of the Living Mummy, the Night of the... There's a mummy. And it says, tennis, canoeing, monsters, anyone? And this cover I'm not going to Photoshop before putting on the Facebook, because, dear God, it's a good-looking cover. That being said, Chapter 1. Mom pointed excitedly out the car window. Look, a cow! Maybe she's just seeing her own reflection. Mom's so fat. Your mom is so fat, she looked out the car window, thought she saw a cow, and just saw her own fat-ass reflection. Oh, nailed it! Already off to a good start. My brother Elliot and I both groaned. We had been driving through farmland for 4 hours, and Mom had pointed out every single cow and horse. Look out your side, Wendy, Mom cried from the front seat. Sheep! I stared out the window and saw about a dozen gray sheep, fat woolly ones, grazing on a grassy green hill. Nice sheep, Mom, I said, rolling my eyes. She can be a total sheeple, you know, like what teenagers call people when they buy all their clothes from Hot Topic, and they're like, you're a sheeple. Do you have that in my size? That's pretty edgy. There's a cow, Elliot exclaimed. Now he was doing it. I reached across the back seat and gave him a hard shove. Mom, is it possible to explode from boredom? I moaned. Boom, Elliot shouted. The kid is a riot, isn't he? I told you, Dad muttered to Mom. A 12-year-old is too old to go on a long car trip. So is an 11-year-old, Elliot protested. I'm 12. Elliot is 11. How can you two be bored? Mom asked. Look, horses! Dad sped up to pass a huge yellow truck. The road curved through high, sloping hills. In the far distance, I could see gray mountains rising up in a heavy mist, much like the Misty Mountains from the, you know, Lord of the Rings and shit. Like those mountains that... They were shittily named. The guy created all of his own languages and stuff and then came up with the Misty Mountains. That's bullshit. There's so much beautiful scenery to admire, Mom gushed. Ew. After a while, it looks like some boring old calendar, I complained. Elliot pointed out his window. Look! No horses! He doubled over laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing anyone had ever said. Elliot really cracks himself up. Mom turned to the front seat. She narrowed her eyes at my brother. Are you making fun of me? She demanded. Yes! Elliot replied. Of course not, I chimed in. Who would ever make fun of you, Mom? When do you ever stop? Mom complained. We're leaving Idaho, Dad announced. That's Wyoming up ahead. We'll be in those mountains soon. Maybe we'll see some mountain cows, I exclaimed sarcastically. Elliot laughed. Mom sighed. Go ahead. Ruin our first family vacation in 3 fucking years, you ungrateful shits. We hit a bump. I heard the trailer bounce behind us. Dad had honked one of those big old... He hooked one of those big old-fashioned trailers to the back of our car. We had dragged it all over the West. The trailer was actually kind of fun. It had 4 narrow beds built into the sides, and it had a table we could sit around to play cards or eat. It even had a small kitchen. I lived in an apartment like that when I started doing Goosebumps. At night, we'd pull into a trailer camp. Dad would hook up the trailer to water and electricity, and we would start cooking meth. Oh, sorry, and we spent the night inside in our own private little house. We hit another bump. I heard the trailer bounce behind us again. The car lurched forward as we started to climb into the mountains. Mom, how do you know if I'm getting car sick or not? How do I know if I'm getting car sick rather than her knowing, because she can't feel his feelings unless she's from Beta Zed like Deanna Troi. She's only half Betazoid. Star Trek. Elliot asked. Mom turned back to us, frowning. Elliot, you never get car sick, she said in a low voice. Did you forget? Oh, right, Elliot replied. I just thought it might be something to do. Elliot! Mom screamed. If you're so bored, take a nap. That's boring, my brother muttered. At my mutter. Dune. I could see Mom's face turning an angry red. Mom doesn't look like Dad, Elliot, and me. She has blonde and has blue eyes and very fair skin, which turns red very easily. And she's kind of plump. Ooh, I called that one. My dad and brother and I are skinny and sort of dark. The three of us have brown hair and brown eyes. You kids don't know how lucky you are. You could be fat shits like your mother, Dad said. You're getting to see some amazing sights. Bobby Harrison got to go to baseball camp, Elliot grumbled, and Jay Thurman went to sleepaway camps for 8 weeks and barely got molested. I want to go to sleepaway camp too, I protested. You'll go to camp next summer, Mom replied sharply. This is the chance of a lifetime. But the chance of a lifetime is so boring, Elliot complained. Wendy, entertain your brother, Dad ordered. Excuse me, I replied. How am I supposed to entertain him? Play car geography, Mom suggested. Oh, no, not again, Elliot wailed. Go ahead, I'll start, Mom said. Atlanta, Hotlanta, home of the Hotlanta rap stuff, Luda, you know, that sort of thing. I just watched a documentary on Hotlanta. No, it wasn't. It was on some record label. Oh my god, this is not interesting. Anyway, they sold a bunch of cocaine and didn't make music. It has nothing to do with anything. God damn. Atlanta ends with A, so I have to think of a city that starts with A. Albany, I said. Your turn, Elliot. A city that starts with Y. My brother thought for a minute, then he twisted up his face. I quit, he said, being unaware of Yuma, Arizona. My brother is such a bad sport. He takes games too seriously, and he really hates to lose. Sometimes he gets so intense when he's playing soccer or softball. I really feel worried about him. Sometimes he thinks he can't win, he just quits, like now. What about Youngstown? Mom asked. What about it? Elliot grumbled. I have an idea, I said. How about letting Elliot and me ride in the trailer for a while? Yeah, cool! Elliot cried like the intro song to Clarissa Explains It All, which has been referenced in every Goosebumps recently. I don't think so, my mom replied. She turned to Dad. It's against the law to ride in a trailer, isn't it? Dad said, slowing the car. We are climbing through thick pine woods now. The air smelled so fresh and sweet. Let us, Elliot pleaded. Come on, let us. I don't see any harm in letting them ride in the back for a while, Dad told Mom, making a roadhead motion. As long as they're careful. We'll be careful, Elliot promised. Are you sure it's safe? Mom asked Dad. Dad nodded. What could happen? He pulled the car to the side of the highway. Elliot and I slid out. We ran to the trailer, pulled open the door, and hurried inside. A few seconds later, the car pulled back onto the highway. We bounced along behind it in the big trailer. This is so cool, Elliot declared, making his way to the back window. Do I have good ideas or what? I asked, following him. He slapped me a high five. That was me slapping myself a high five. It's just me and Franklin here. We stared out the back window. The highway seemed to tilt down as we headed up the mountains. The trailer bounced and swayed as the car tugged in. Tugged it. The road tilted up steeper and steeper. And that's when all our troubles began. I'm drinking a vodka and sparkling water, and it's chapter 2 with the old Dune reads a Goosebumps, yeah! I win! Elliot cried. He jumped up and raised both fists in triumph. 3 out of 5, I demanded, rubbing my wrist. Come on, 3 out of 5, unless you're chicken, kikiriki! I knew that would get him. Elliot can't stand to be called a chicken. He settled in the back seat. We leaned over the narrow table and clasped hands. He had been arm wrestling for about 10 minutes. It was kind of fun, because the table bounced every time the trailer rolled over a bump in the road. I'm as strong as Elliot, but he's more determined. A lot more determined. You never saw anyone groan and sweat and strain so much in arm wrestling, unless you watched the iconic film Over the Top. Yeah. That was a solid movie. Also, I think I said iconic like 6 times so far, so if I say it again, just turn off the podcast to punish me. To me, a game is just a game, but to Elliot, every game is life or death. He had won 2 out of 3 of 5 matches. He had won 2 out of 3 about 5 times. There we go. My wrist was sore, and my hand ached. Well, welcome to being a teenage boy. But I really wanted to beat him in this final match. I leaned over the table and squeezed his hand harder. I gritted my teeth and stared menacingly into his brown eyes. Go! He cried. We both strained against each other. I pushed hard. Elliot's hand started to bend back. I pushed harder. I nearly had him. Just a little harder. He let out a groan and pushed back. His eyes shut. His face turned beet red. I could see the veins pushing out the sides of his neck. My brother just can't stand to lose. Slam! The back of my hand hit the table hard. Elliot had won again. Actually, I let him win. I didn't want to see his whole head explode because of a stupid arm wrestling match. He jumped up and pumps his fist, cheering for himself. Hey, I cried out as the trailer swayed hard, and he went crashing into the wall. The trailer lurched again. I grabbed the table to keep from falling off my seat. What's going on? We changed direction. We're heading down now, Elliot replied. He edged his way back toward the table, but we had bumped hard, and he toppled to the floor. Hey, we're going backwards. I'll bet Mom's driving, I said, holding onto the table edge with both hands. Mom always drives like a crazy person. When you warn her that she's going 80, she always says, that can't be right. It feels as if I'm going 35. She shouldn't be driving. She's a menace to society. The trailer was bouncing and bumping, rolling downhill. Elliot and I were bouncing and bumping with the trailer. What's their problem? Elliot cried, grabbing on to one of the beds, struggling to keep his balance. Are they backing up? Why are we going backwards? The trailer roared downhill. I pushed myself up from the table and stumbled to the front to see the car. Shoving aside the red plain plaid curtain, I peered out through the small window. Elliot? I choked out. We've got a problem. Huh? A problem? He replied, bouncing harder as the trailer picked up speed. Mom and Dad aren't pulling us anymore, I told him. The car is gone!
Chapter 3.
Elliot's face filled with confusion. He didn't understand me, or maybe he didn't believe me. The trailer has come loose, I screamed, staring out the bouncing window. We're rolling downhill on our own! No, 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 Elliot chattered. He wasn't stuttering. He was bouncing so hard he could barely speak. His sneakers hopped so hard on the trailer floor, he seemed to be tap dancing. Ow! I let out a pained shriek as my head bounced against the ceiling. The fucking ceiling, listeners! The ceiling! Elliot and I stumbled to the back, gripping the windowsill tightly. I struggled to see where we were heading. The road curved steeply downhill through thick pine woods on both sides. The trees were a bouncing blur of greens and browns as we hurtled past, picking up speed, bouncing and tumbling faster, faster. The tires roared beneath us. The trailer tilted and dipped. I fell to the floor, landing hard on my knees. Reached to pull myself up, but the trailer swayed and I went sprawling on my back. Pulling myself to my knees, I saw Elliot bouncing around on the floor like a soccer ball. I threw myself at the back of the trailer and peered out the window. The trailer bumped hard. The road curved sharply, but we didn't curve with it. We shot off the side of the road, swerved into the trees. Elliot! I shrieked. We're gonna crash! Chapter 4. The trailer jolted hard. I heard a cracking sound. It's gonna break in half, I thought. It's gonna be like a white trash version of Lost. I pressed both hands against the front and stared out the window. Dark trees flew past. A hard bump sent me sprawling to the floor. I heard Elliot calling my name. Wendy, Wendy, Wendy! I shut my eyes and tensed every muscle and waited for the crash. Waited. Waited. Motherfucking waited. Silence. I opened my eyes. It took me a few seconds to realize that we were no longer moving. I took a deep breath and climbed to my feet. Wendy! I heard Elliot's weak cry from the back of the trailer. My legs were trembling as I turned around. My whole body felt weird, as if we were still bouncing. Elliot, are you okay? He had been thrown into one of the bottom bunks. I guess, he replied. He lowered his feet to the floor and shook his head. I'm kind of dizzy. Me too, I confessed. What a ride! Better than Space Mountain! Elliot exclaimed. Especially better than that shitty version they did with the Red Hot Chili Peppers music playing like 3 years ago. That was bullshit. He climbed to his feet. Let's get out of this thing. We both stared to the door at the front. It was an uphill climb. The trailer tilted up. I reached the door first. I grabbed the handle. A loud knock on the door made me jump back. Hey! I cried. Three more knocks. It's Mom and Dad! Elliot cried. They found us. Open it up! Hurry! He didn't have to tell me to hurry. My heart skipped. I was so glad to see them. I turned the handle, pushed open the trailer door, and gasped. So, in order to save my voice and my enthusiasm, I read these now chapter by chapter. That's why you don't just hear me drunkenly going into the next one. And it's so far working out well, and it's motivating for me. I don't know why. But every time I look at them, like, to see how long each one is, where I'm like, yes, this one's only half of a PDF page. I mean, one book page. Nice save, Dune. And this one is three full PDF pages, so it's a long one. Chapter 5 is a long one. I stared into the face of a blonde-haired man. His blue eyes sparkled in the bright sunlight. He was dressed in all white. He wore a crisp white t-shirt tucked into baggy white shorts. A small round button pinned to his t-shirt read, "Only the best," in bold black letters. Hi, I managed to choke out. He flashed me a gleaming smile. He seemed to have about 2,000 teeth. That's way too many teeth for a person to have. "Hey, guys, everyone okay in there?" he asked. His big... I'm assuming it's the guy from the cover of the book, so I'm going to talk in the way that I think he would. So it's going to be really heavy, but I'm probably going to forget to do it, because fuck that. His blue eyes sparkled even brighter. "Yeah, we're okay," I told him, a little shaken, but... "Who are you?" Elliot cried, poking his head out the door. The guy's smile didn't fade. "My name's Buddy." "I'm Wendy. He's Elliot. We thought you were our parents," I explained. I hopped down to the ground. Elliot followed me. "Where are Mom and Dad?" he asked, frowning. "I haven't seen anyone, guy," Buddy told him. He studied the trailer. "What happened here? You came unhitched?" I nodded, brushing my dark hair off my face. "Yeah, on one of the steep hills, I guess." "Dangerous," Buddy muttered. "You must have been really scared." "Not me," Elliot declared. What a kid. First, he's shaking in terror and calling out my name over and over. Now he's Mr. Macho, my favorite 90s wrestler. "I've never been so scared in all my life," I admitted. I took a few steps away from the trailer and searched the woods. The trees cracked and swayed in a light breeze. The sun beamed down brightly. I shielded my eyes with one hand as I peered around. No sign of Mom and Dad. I couldn't see the highways through the thick trees. I could see the tire tracks of our trailer had made in the soft dirt and shit. Somehow, we had shot through a clear path between the trees. The trailer had come to rest at the foot of a sharp, sloping hill. Wow, we were lucky, I muttered.
Yeah, very lucky,
Buddy declared cheerfully. He stepped up beside me, placing his hands on my shoulders, and turned me around.
Check it out! Look where you guys landed!
Gazing up the hill, I saw a wide clearing between the trees, and then I saw a huge red and white banner stretched high on two poles. I had to squint to read the words on the banner. Elliot read them aloud.
King Jelly Jam Sports Camp.
The camp is on the other side of the hill, Buddy told us with a strange comma in the middle of that sentence, flashing us both a friendly smile.
Come on, follow me!
But, my brother sputtered, we have to find our parents.
Hey, no problem, guy. You can wait for them at the camp, Buddy assured me.
But how will they know where to find us? I protested. Should we leave a note? Buddy flashed me another dazzling smile.
Nah, I'll take care of it, he told me. No problemo.
It said no problem, but I figured someone that looks like that would say no problemo. He stepped past the trailer and started up the hill. His white t-shirt and white shorts gleamed in the sunlight. I saw that his socks and high tops were sparkling white, too. That's his uniform. He must work at the camp, I decided.
Camp Anawana, we hold you in our hearts. And when we think about it,
it makes me want to fart.
Never want to fart. Get a rider for the price, you know? Buddy turned back.
You guys coming?
He motioned with both hands.
Come on, you're gonna like it.
Elliot and I hurried to catch him. My legs trembled as I ran. I could still feel the trailer four bouncing and jolting beneath me. I wondered if I would ever feel normal again. As we made our way up the grassy hill, the red and white banner came into clearer view.
King Jelly Jam Sports Camp, I read the words out loud.
A funny purple cartoon character had been drawn beside the words on the banner. He looked like a blob of great bubblegum. Oh, he's Grimace. He had a big smile on his face. He wore a gold crown on his head.
Who is that? I asked Buddy.
Buddy glanced up at the banner.
That's King Jelly Jam, he replied. He's our little mascot.
Weird-looking mascot for a sports camp, I declared, staring up at the purple blobby king. Buddy didn't reply.
Do you work at the camp? Elliot asked.
Buddy nodded.
It's a great place to work. I'm the head counselor, guys. So, welcome.
But we can't go to your camp, I protested. We have to find our parents. We have to... Buddy put a hand on my shoulder and a hand on Elliot's shoulder. He guided us up the hill.
You guys had a close call. You might as well stay and have some fun. Enjoy the camp until I can hook up with your parents. Just like I hook up with kids, and I mean that in a sexual sense.
As we neared the top of the hill, I heard voices, kids' voices, shouting and laughing. The clearing narrowed. Tall pine trees, birch trees, and maples clustered over the hill.
What kind of sports camp is this? Elliot asked Buddy.
We are...
He responded like a retard.
We play all kinds of sports, Buddy replied. From ping pong to football, from croquet to soccer. We have swimming. We have tennis. We have archery. We have diddling. We even have a marbles tournament.
Sounds like a cool place, my brother declared, grinning at me. Only the best, Buddy said, slapping Elliot on the shoulder. I reached the top of the hill first and peered down through the trees to the camp. It seemed to stretch for miles. I could see two long, white, two-story buildings on either side. Between them, I saw several playing fields, a baseball diamond, a long row of tennis courts, and two enormous swimming pools.
Those long, white buildings are the dorms,
like on the cover of the book, Buddy explained, pointing.
That's the girls' dorm, and that's the boys'. You guys can stay in them while you're here.
Wow, it looks awesome, Elliot exclaimed.
Two swimming pools? Olympic size, Buddy told him. We have diving competitions, too.
Are you into diving?
Only inside the trailer,
I joked. I would have gone with only Muff, and then I would have high-fived everyone.
Wendy's into swimming, Elliot told Buddy. I think there's a four-lap swim race this afternoon, Buddy told me. I'll check the schedule for you.
It says schedule, but once again, I'm taking some liberties with this character. The sun beamed down on us as we followed the path down the hill. The back of my neck started to prickle. A cool swim sounded pretty good to me. Can anyone sign up for baseball? Elliot asked Buddy. I mean, do you have to be on a team or something?
You can play any sport you want, Buddy told him. The only rule at King Jelly Jam's sports camp is to try hard.
Buddy tapped the bottom button on his shirt. Only the best, he said. The breeze blew my hair back over my face. I knew.
Page break.
I knew I should have cut it before vacation. I decided I'd have to find something to tie it back with as soon as I got to the dorm. A soccer match was underway on the nearest field. Whistles blew. Kids shouted. I saw a long row of archery targets at the far end of the soccer field. Buddy started jogging toward the field. Elliot stepped up beside me. Hey, we wanted to go to camp, right? He said, grinning. Well, we made it! Before I could reply, he trotted after Buddy. I brushed back my hair one more time, then followed. But I stopped when I saw a little girl poke her head out from behind a wide tree trunk. She appeared to be about 6 or 7. She had bright red hair and a face full of freckles. She wore a pale blue t-shirt down over black tights. Hey! She called out in a loud whisper. Hey! I turned toward her, startled.
Don't come in, she called. Run away! Do not come in!
I don't want to alarm anyone, but I just made a drink and I am out of vodka. I also did that thing where you're like, eh, there's only like 2 shots left. I might as well just put in this insane mixed drink, so, this might get a little weird.
Chapter 6, getting weird.
Buddy turned back quickly.
What's the problem, Wendy?
He called. When I returned my eyes to the tree, the red-haired girl had vanished. I blinked a couple of times. Blink, blink, blink. I like the cartoon winking or blinking sound.
No trace of her. What was the girl doing out here? I wondered. Did she hide behind that tree just to scare people?
No problem, I called to Buddy. I followed Elliot and the counselor into the camp. I quickly forgot about the girl as we made our way around the soccer field.
It's a football field for all you foreign listeners.
And past a low row of fenced-in tennis courts. The thwack of tennis balls followed us as we turned on to the main path that led through the camp.
So many sports! So much activity!
We pushed our way through the kids of all ages, eagerly hurrying to the swimming pools,
to the basketball courts, to the baseball diamond, to the bowling lanes. Awesome!
Elliot kept repeating, totally awesome! And for once, he was right. We passed several other camp counselors. They were all young men and women dressed completely in white, all of them good-looking and smiling cheerfully. And we passed dozens of little triangular signs showing the purple blobby face of King Jelly Jam, which I think that the people at Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest? Yeah, Dragon Quest should sue, because those slimes, that's straight out of that. Smiling out from under his shiny gold crown, under each face was a camp slogan, only the best. He's kind of cute, I decided. I realized I was starting to like everything about this amazing sports camp. And I have to confess, I found myself secretly hoping that Mom and Dad wouldn't be able to find Elliot and me for at least a day or two. Isn't that terrible? I felt really guilty about it, but I couldn't help thinking it. The camp was just too exciting, especially after days of riding in the back seat of the car, staring at the cows.
And the cow in the front seat.
We dropped my brother off at the boys' dorm room first. Another counselor, a tall, dark-haired guy named Scooter, of course he was named Scooter, greeted Elliot and took my brother off to find a dorm room. Then Buddy led me to the girls' dorm on the other side of the camp. We passed a gymnastics competition being held in an outdoor arena. Beyond that, one of the swimming pools was jammed with kids watching a diving contest off the high board, which are illegal now, I think. Buddy and I chatted as we walked. I told him about my school and about how my favorite sports are swimming and biking. Neither of which are sports, girl. We stopped at the white double door entrance to the dorm.
So where are you from?
Oh, sorry. Where are you from? I asked him. Buddy stared back at me. He had such a confused expression on his face. For a moment, I thought he didn't understand the question.
Do you come from around here?
I asked. He swallowed hard. He squinted his blue eyes.
Weird, he muttered finally.
What's weird? I demanded.
I don't remember, he stammered. I don't remember where I'm from. Isn't that weird?
He raised his right hand to his mouth and nibbled his pointer finger. Wait, didn't we have this plot in a recent Goosebumps where people just didn't remember where they were from and it wasn't a good sign? Hey, I forget stuff all the time, I told him, seeing how upset he was. I didn't get a chance to say anything else. A young woman counselor with very short, straight black hair and bright purple lipstick came trotting up to us. Hello, I'm Holly. Are you ready for some sports?
I guess, I replied uncertainly.
This is Wendy, Buddy told her, his expression still troubled. She needs a room.
No problem, Holly declared cheerfully. Only the best.
Only the best, Buddy replied quietly.
He flashed me a smile, but I could see he was still struggling to remember where his home was.
Weird, huh?
Holly led the way into the dorm. I followed her down a long, white-tiled hall. Several girls came running past, on their way to different sports. They were all shouting and laughing excitedly. I peeked into some of the open rooms as we passed them by. Wow, I thought, this place is so modern and luxurious. It's not exactly your basic, rustic summer camp.
We don't stay in the rooms much at all, Holly told me. Everyone is always outdoors, competing.
She pushed open a white door and motioned for me to step on in. Bright sunlight flooded the room from a wide window on the opposite wall. I saw two bright blue bunk beds against each wall, a sleek white dresser between the two, two white leather armchairs. The walls were white. They were bare except for a small framed drawing of King Jelly Jam above the dresser.
Nice room, I exclaimed, squinting against the bright sunlight.
Holly smiled. Her bright purple lips made the rest of her features seem to disappear.
Glad you like it, Wendy. You can take the bottom bunk
over there, she pointed. She had purple fingernails that matched her lipstick.
Do I have roommates? I asked.
Holly nodded. You'll meet them soon. They'll get you started with some activities. And I think they're playing soccer on the lower field.
I don't know. I'm just a girl.
I need to stop saying that. She started out of the room, but turned at the doorway.
You'll like Deirdre. Oh, God damn it. I hate weird names. Deirdre.
And your name's now Donna.
You'll like Donna. I think she's about your age.
Thanks, I said, gazing around the room.
Catch you later,
Holly replied. She vanished into the hall. I stood in the center of the sunlit room, thinking hard. What am I supposed to do for clothes? I wondered. What about swimsuits? Sweats? Tampons? All I had were the denim short shorts and pink and blue striped t-shirt I was wearing. And why didn't Holly tell me where to go next? I asked myself. Why did she just leave me here by myself in this fucking empty room? I didn't have long to ask myself questions. I started to cross to the window when I heard voices. Whispered voices outside the door. I turned to the door. Were my roommates returning? I listened to the excited buzz of whispers. Then I heard a girl loudly instruct the others, "Come on, we've got her trapped in there. Let's get her."
Meow, 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 meow. Do you think you're better off? Chapter 7, meow, 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 meow.
I gasped and searched frantically for a place to hide. No time. Three girls burst into the room, their eyes narrowed, their mouths twisted into menacing sneers. They formed a line and moved toward me quickly.
Yeah, at least they're polite about it.
Whoa, wait! I cried. I raised both hands as if to shield myself from their attack. The tall girl with streaky blonde hair was the first to laugh. Then the other two joined in.
Gotcha!
The blonde girl declared, tossing back her long hair triumphantly. I glared back at her, my mouth hanging open.
Did you really think we are going to attack?
One of the others asked. She was thin and wiry, with very short black hair cut into bangs. She wore gray sweats and a torn gray t-shirt.
Well, I started.
I could feel my face growing hot. Their little joke had really fooled me. I felt like a total jerk fag.
Don't look at me, the third girl said, shaking her head.
She had frizzy blonde hair tumbling out from beneath a blue and red Chicago Cubs cap.
It was all Donna's idea, she pointed to the girl with streaky blonde hair.
Don't feel bad, Donna told me, even though it's more difficult. I should just say Deirdre. I need to look up how to pronounce this stupid fucking name. Give me a second. Okay, so after looking up and getting some conflicting results, I've got that the spelling of the name D-I-E-R-D-R-E is either Deirdre, Deirdre,
Deirdre. I'm going with Deirdre. Fucking Deirdre. Don't feel bad, Deirdre told me, grinning. Her green eyes flashed. You're the third girl this week. The other two snickered. And did the others think you were attacking? Deirdre nodded, very pleased with herself. It's kind of a mean joke, she admitted, but it's funny. This time I joined in the laughter. I have a younger brother. I'm used to dumb jokes, I told Deirdre. She swept her hair back again, rummaging around on the top dresser, found a hair scrunchie to hold it back. This is Jan, and this is Ivy, she said, motioning to the girls with easy-to-fucking-pronounce names. Jan was the one with the short black bangs. She slumped onto the lower bunk. I'm whipped, she sighed. What a workout! Look at me, I'm sweating like a pig! Ever heard of deodorant? Ivy cracked. Jan stuck her tongue out at Ivy in reply. Get changed, Deirdre instructed them both. We've only got 10 minutes. 10 minutes till what? Jan demanded, bending down and rubbing her calf muscles. Did you forget the 4-lap race? Deirdre replied. Oh, wow! Jan cried, jumping up. I did forget. She hurried to the dresser. Where is my swimsuit? Ivy followed her. They began frantically sifting through their drawers, as if looking for that last rock of crack. It's not there. You guys smoked it. You're crazy people. Deirdre turned to me. Do you want to enter the race? She asked. I don't have a swimsuit, I replied. She shrugged. No problem. I have about a dozen. She studied me. We're about the same size. I'm just a little taller. Well, I'd love to swim, I told her. Maybe I'll just go to the pool and splash around for a while. Huh? Not compete? Deirdre replied. All three girls turned to me, stunned expressions on their faces. I'll do some sports later, I said. Right now, I just want to dive in and swim a little. You know, mermaid shit, to cool off. But you can't, Jan cried. She gaped at me as if I had suddenly grown a second head. No way, Ivy said, shaking her head. You have to compete, Deirdre added. You can't just swim. Only the best, Ivy recited. Right, only the best, Jan agreed. I felt totally confused. What the fuck do you mean? I demanded. Why do you keep saying that? Deirdre tossed me a blue swimsuit. Put it on. We're gonna be late. But, I sputtered. All three girls hurried to get into their swimsuits. I saw that I had no choice. I went to the bathroom and started to change. But my questions repeated in my mind. I really wanted them answered. Why did I have to compete in the race? Why couldn't I just have a swim? And why did everyone keep repeating, only the best? What did they mean? Okay, saving voice by going back and forth between recording some sweet goosebumps and Podgad's episode 55 and Plants vs. Zombies, chapter 8. The enormous blue pool sparkled under the bright sunlight. The sun hovered high overhead. The concrete burned the soles of my bare feet. I couldn't wait to get into the water. Shielding my eyes with one hand, I searched for Elliot, but I couldn't find him in the crowd of kids who were waiting to watch the race. Elliot was probably already playing 3 sports, I told myself. This had to be the perfect camp for my brother. I gazed down the line of girls waiting to compete in the 4-lap race. We all stood on the edge of the deep end of the pool, waiting to get in. I silently counted. There were at least 2 dozen girls in the race, and the pool was wide enough for all of us to have a lane to swim in. Hey, you look terrific in my swimsuit, Deirdre said, very uncomfortably. Her green eyes studied me and just hovered too long on certain areas. You should have tied your hair back, Wendy. It's going to slow you down. Wow, I thought. Deirdre really cares about swimming. Why not shave that horrible bush of yours, too? That thing's going to add a couple seconds. Are you a good swimmer? I asked her. She swatted a fly on the back of her calf. The best, she replied, grinning. How about you? I've never really raced, I told her. The pool counselors were all young women. They wore white 2-piece swimsuits. Across the pool, I saw Holly sitting on the edge of the diving board, talking to another counselor. A tall, red-haired counselor moved to the edge of the pool, and I blew her a whistle. Weep! I'm not really good at whistling. That was all right. Franklin didn't appreciate it. Everyone ready? She called. We all shouted back that we were ready as fuck. Then the long line of girls grew silent. We all turned to the pool, leaned forward, and prepared to dive in. The water shimmered beneath me. The sun burned down on my back and shoulders. I felt about to melt. I couldn't wait to jump in. The whistle blew. I sprang forward and hit the water hard. I gasped from the shock of the cold against my hot skin. My arms churned hard as I pulled myself forward. The splash of thrashing arms and kicking feet sounded like a roar of a waterfall. I dipped my face into the water, feeling the refreshing coldness. Turning my head, I glimpsed Deirdre, a few lengths behind me. She swam in steady rhythm, her arms and legs moving smoothly, gracefully. I'm ahead of everyone, I realized, glancing across the pool. I'm winning the race! With a hard kick, I reached the other end of the pool. I made a sharp turn and pushed off. As I started back to the deep end, the other girls were still approaching the shallow end wall. I pulled myself harder. My heart started to pound. I knew I'd win the first lap easily. Then there would be 3 laps to go. 3 laps! I suddenly realized how dumb I was. The other girls were pacing themselves. They weren't swimming full speed because they knew it was a 4-lap race. If I kept swimming this hard, I wouldn't survive 2 laps. I sucked in a deep breath, then let it out slowly. Slowly.
Slowly.
That was the word of the day.
Ah!
Oh, I thought it was Pee-wee's Playhouse style. I slowed my kicking, shot my arms out, and pulled them back slowly.
Ah!
Took long breaths. Long, slow breaths. As I made my turn and started the second lap, several other swimmers had moved beside me. I caught Deirdre's eye as she swam past. She never broke her steady rhythm. Stroke, stroke, breathe. Stroke, stroke, breathe. Buddy, you're a young man. On the other side of Deirdre, I saw Jan swimming comfortably, easily. Jan was so small and light. She seemed to float over the water like Jesus fucking Christ. Into the third lap, I kept a few lengths behind Deirdre. I had to concentrate on keeping a slow, even pace. I pretended I was a robot. Beep, beep, pop, boop, beep, 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 boop. Programmed to swim slowly. Deirdre turned into a 4th lap, a few seconds ahead of me. I saw her expression change as she made her turn. She narrowed her eyes. Her entire face grew tight and tense. Deirdre really wants to win, I saw. I wondered if I could catch her. I wondered if I could beat her. I made my turn and put on the speed. I ignored the aching in my arms. I ignored the cramp in my left foot. I thrust myself forward, kicking hard from the waist. My hands cut through the water. Faster. I glimpsed Jan fall behind. I saw the disappointment on her face as I passed by. How the fuck do you see this if you're swimming as fast as you can? I don't believe this, R.L. Stine, if you ever swam. Pounding, thrusting arms and legs churned the water into froth. The splashing became a roar. The roar nearly drowned out the cheers of the kids watching from around the pool. My heart thudded so hard, I thought my chest might explode. My arms ached. They felt as if they each weighed 1,000 pounds. R.L. Stine is really into similes at the moment. Faster. I pulled up beside Deirdre. Close. So close. I could hear her gasping breaths. Breaths. That wasn't even a weird sexual joke. I glimpsed her face, tight with concentration. She's just like Elliot, I decided. She wants to win so badly. Lots of times I let Elliot win a game, because he cared about it so much more than I did, and so did Deirdre. As we neared the wall at the deep end, I let Deirdre pull ahead. I saw how much it meant to her. I saw how desperate she was to finish first. What the heck? I thought. There's nothing wrong with coming in second. I heard the cheers ring out as Deirdre won the race. I touched the wall, then dipped below the surface. I pulled myself up and grabbed the wall. My entire body ached and throbbed. I gasped in breath after breath. I shut my eyes and pulled my hair back with both hands, squeezing the water out of it. My arms were so tired, like a hack comedian had just flown in there today. I could barely pull myself out of the pool. I was one of the last swimmers out. The other girls had all formed a circle around Deirdre. I pushed my way into the crowd of girls to see what was happening. My eyes burned. I brushed water out of them. I saw the red-haired counselor hand something to Deirdre. Something gold and shiny. She gonna go and take it. Everyone cheered. Then the circle broke, and the girls all headed in different directions. I made my way up to Deirdre. Way to go! I exclaimed. I came close, but you're really fast. I'm on the swim team at school, she replied. She held up the gold object the counselor had given her. Computer, what are you loading? If you make me lose this sweet audio track, I'm going to be bummed. I can see it clearly now. A shiny gold coin. Computer, if you make me say choin instead of goining... Wow. Alcohol. Anna spilled on the keyboard.
A shiny gold coin. It had a smiling King Jelly Jam engraved on it. I couldn't read the words around the edge of the coin, but I could guess what they were. It's my fifth king coin, Deirdre exclaimed proudly. Why is she so excited about it? I wondered. It wasn't a real coin. It was like a Bitcoin or some shit. It wasn't even real gold. What's a king coin? I asked. The coin gleamed in the sunlight. If I win one more king coin, I can walk in the winner's walk, Deirdre explained. I started to ask what the winner's walk was, but Jan and Ivy came running up to congratulate Deirdre. All three of them started talking at once. I suddenly remembered my brother. Where is Elliot? I wondered. What has he been doing? I turned away from Deirdre and the other girls and started toward the pool exit, but I had only taken a few steps when I heard someone calling my name. I spun around to see Holly jogging toward me. Her purple lipsticked lips were knotted in a fretful expression.
Wendy, you'd better come see me. Or come with me. And just do whatever, bitch, the counselor told me. My heart skipped.
Huh? What's wrong? I asked.
I'm afraid there's a problem, Holly said softly.
Chapter 9. Something happened to Mom and Dad. That's the first thought that burst into my head. What's wrong? I cried. My parents, are they okay? Are they...
We haven't found your parents yet, Holly said. She wrapped a towel around my trembling shoulders. Then she led me to a bench at the side of the pool.
Is it Elliot? I cried, dropping down beside her. What's wrong?
Holly kept one arm around my shoulders. She leaned close, her brown eyes staring into mine.
Wendy, the problem is that you didn't really try very hard to win the race, she said.
I swallowed hard.
Excuse me?
I watched you, Holly continued. I saw you slow your strokes in the last lap. I don't think you really tried to win.
But, I
sputtered. Holly continued to stare at me without blinking.
Am I right? She demanded softly. I'm not used to swimming that far, I stammered. It was my first race. I didn't think...
I know you're new at camp, Holly said, brushing a fly off my leg. But you know the camp slogan, right?
For sure, I replied. It's everywhere I look. But what does it mean?
Only the best.
I guess it's kind of a warning, Holly replied thoughtfully. That's why I decided to talk to you now, Wendy.
A warning? I cried.
I felt more confused than ever. A warning about what?
Holly didn't reply. She forced a smile to her face and stood up.
Catch you later, okay?
She turned and hurried away.
I think this shit's getting real, am I right? You know, because there's a warning going on, and these kids are there, and their parents are gone. It seems like there's something going on at Camp Jelly Jam Sports and Wacky Times.
I wrapped the towel tighter around my shoulders and stared back to the dorm to change. As I walked past the tennis courts, I thought hard about Holly's warning.
Why was it so important for me to win the race?
So that I could be awarded one of those gold coins with a blobby purple king on it? Fuck that shit. Why should I care about winning coins?
Why couldn't I just play some games, make some friends, and have a good time? Why did Holly say she was giving me a warning?
Warning about what?
I shook my head, trying to shake away all the puzzling questions. I had heard about sports camps from some of my friends back home. Some camps, they said, were really tough. The kids were all serious jock types who wanted to win, win, win. I guess that this was one of those camps.
Oh well, I thought. I don't have to love this camp. Mom and Dad will be here soon to take Elliot and me away.
I glanced up and saw Elliot.
Sprawled face down on the fucking ground, his arms and legs spread out awkwardly, his eyes closed.
Unconscious.
Chapter 10.
Oh, I let out a frightened wail. Elliot, Elliot! I dropped down beside him. He sat up and grinned at me. How many times are you gonna fall for that? He asked.
I think the writers of The Sandlot were like, this is brilliant, we should make this on film.
He started to laugh. I slugged him right in the fucking shoulder as hard as I could. You creep!
That made him laugh even harder. It really cracks him up when he makes me look like a jerk. Why do I always fall for this stupid joke? Elliot pulls it on me all the time, and I always believe he's been knocked out cold. I'm never falling for that again, never, I cried. Elliot pulled himself to his feet. Come watch me play ping pong, he said, tugging my hand. I'm in the tournament. I'm beating this kid, Jeff. He thinks he's good because he puts a spin on his serve, but he's pitiful. I can't, I replied. I pulled out of his grasp. I'm dripping wet. I have to change. Come watch, he insisted. It won't take long. I'll beat him really fast, okay? Elliot. He certainly was excited. If I beat Jeff, I can win the King Coin, he announced. Then I'm going to win 5 more. I want to win 6 so I can walk in the winner's walk before Mom and Dad come for us.
Good luck, I mumbled, rubbing my wet hair with the towel.
Were you in the swim race? Did you win? Elliot asked, tugging my hand. No, I came in 2nd, I told him. He snickered. You're a loser. Come watch me beat this kid. I read on a really cool shirt on a morbidly obese guy that 2nd place is the first loser, so it's a fact. I rolled my eyes. Okay, okay. Elliot pulled me to a row of outdoor ping pong tables. They were shielded from the sun by a broad white canvas awning. He hurried up to the table on the left. Jeff was waiting for him there, softly bouncing a ping pong ball in the air with his paddle. I had pictured a little shrimpy guy that Elliot could easily beat. You know, Asian. But Jeff was a big, red-faced blonde kid with bulging muscles, like a fucking Viking. He had to be twice the size of my brother. I took a seat at a white wooden bench across from the tables. Elliot can't beat this big guy, I thought. My poor brother is in for a major defeat. As they started to play, Buddy came walking over and sat down beside me. He flashed me a smile. No word from your parents yet, he said, but we'll find them. We watched the ping pong match. Jeff did his serve with a special spin. Elliot slammed it right back at him. To my surprise, the match was really even. I think Jeff was surprised too. His returns became more and more wild. A lot of his special serves missed the table completely. Whoa! They had already played 2 games, Buddy told me. Jeff had won the 1st, Elliot the 2nd. This was the 3rd and the deciding match. The game was a tie at 16, then a tie at 17 and 18. Wow, that is really lazy suspense writing. It was a tie, and then they got a point, then another got a point. Come on, RL, don't phone it in. I don't. Sometimes I do. I watched Elliot become more and more intense. He wanted desperately to win. He leaned stiffly over the table, gripping the paddle so tightly his hand was white. Sweat poured off his forehead. He began ducking and dodging, groaning with each hit, trying to slam every ball. The more frantic and wild Elliot became, the calmer Jeff appeared. The game was a tie at 19. Lazy. Elliot missed a shot and angrily slammed his paddle against the table. I could see that he was losing it. I'd seen this happen to my brother many times before. He could never win if he stayed this intense. As he held the ball and prepared to serve, I raised 2 fingers to the side of my mouth and blew hard. He lowered the paddle when he heard my loud whistle. That was my whistle. That was my signal. I used it many times before. It meant, cool it, Elliot. Calm the fuck down. Elliot turned and gave me a quick thumbs up. I saw him take a deep breath, then another. My whistle signal always helped him. He raised the ball and served it to Jeff. Jeff sent it back a weak return. Elliot smacked it back in the right corner. Jeff swung off balance and missed. Jeff served the next one. Elliot backhanded it. Very soft. The ball tipped over the net and dribbled several times on Jeff's side. Elliot had won. He let out a gleeful cheer and raised his fist in victory. Jeff angrily heaved his paddle to the ground and stomped away. Your brother is good, Buddy said, climbing to his feet. I like his style. He's intense. For sure, I muttered. Buddy hurried over to award Elliot his King Coin. Hey, guy, you only need 5 more, Buddy said, slapping Elliot a high five, then a low five. No problem, Elliot bragged. He held the coin up so I could see it. King Jelly Jam smiled out at me, engraved on the coin. Why did the camp pick this silly little blob for a mascot? I bet he's real, I wondered again. He looked like a fat hunk of pudding wearing a crown. I've got to get changed, I told Elliot. He slid the gold coin into the pocket of his shorts. I'm going to find another sport, he declared. I want to win another king coin before tonight. I waved goodbye, then started toward the dorm. I had walked only a few steps when I heard a low rumbling. Then the ground started to shake. I froze, every muscle in my body locked as the rumbling grew louder. Earthquake! I cried.
Chapter 11.
The ground shook hard. The awning over the ping pong table shook. The tables bounced on the ground. My knees buckled. I struggled to stay on my feet. Earthquake! I choked out again. It's okay, Buddy called, running toward me. He was right. The rumbling sound faded quickly. The ground stopped shaking. That happens sometimes, Buddy explained. It's no problem. My heart still thudded in my chest. My legs wobbled as if they were made of rubber goddamn bands. No problem. See? Buddy motioned around the camp. No one pays any attention. It only lasts a few seconds. I gazed around quickly. Buddy was right again. The kids in the chess tournament, once again Asians, in the front of the lodge didn't glance up from their chessboards. The kickball game on the field across the pool continued without a pause. It usually happens once or twice a day, Buddy told me. But what causes it? I demanded. He shrugged. Beats me. But everything shook so hard. Isn't that dangerous? I asked. Buddy didn't hear me. He was already jogging over to watch the kickball game. I turned and started walking to the dorm. I felt kinda shaky. I could still hear that strange rumbling sound in my ears. As I pulled open the door to the dorm, I bumped into Jan and Ivy. They both had changed into white tennis outfits, and they both carried tennis rackets over their shoulders. I don't want to brag, but 4 years... varsity, tennis, MVP, what up, Dune rules. I'm sorry, that was bragging. It was about tennis. I haven't played tennis once since high school. Fuck it.
You don't care, so I'll move on.
What sports have you been playing? Did you win a king coin? Wasn't that a great swim race? Aren't you having fun, Wendy? Do you play tennis? They both talked at once and shot out half a dozen questions.
If I'm reading correctly, that was 5 questions, asshole.
They seemed really excited. They didn't give me a chance to answer. We need girls for the tennis tournament, Ivy said. We're having a 2-day tournament. Come to the courts after lunch, okay? Okay, I agreed. I'm not that good, but see you later, Jan cried. They both hurried away. Actually, I'm a pretty good tennis player. I have a decent serve, and I do all right with my 2-handed backhand. But I'm not great. Back home, my friend Allison and I always play for fun. We don't try to kill each other. Sometimes we just keep volleying back and forth. We don't even keep score. I'll enter the tennis tournament, I decided, and if I lose in the first round, it's no big deal. Besides, I told myself, Mom and Dad will be here any minute. And Elliot and I have to leave. Will have to leave. Mom and Dad, their faces flash in my mind. They must be frantic, I realized. Or roadkill. They must be worried sick. I hope they were okay. I suddenly had an idea. I'll call home, I decided. I should have thought of this before. I'll call home and leave a message on our answering machine. I'll tell Mom and Dad on the machine where Elliot and I are. No matter where he goes, Dad checks for phone messages every hour. Mom always makes fun of him for being so nervous about a missed call. But he actually brings home the money in the family, so her complaining about that is awfully rude. But they'll both be glad to get this message, I told myself. What a good idea, I congratulated myself. Now, all I needed was a phone. There have to be phones in the dorm, I decided. I searched the small front lobby, but I didn't see any payphones. No one at the front desk. No one I could ask. I peered down a long hallway. Rooms on both sides. No phones. I tried the other hallway. No payphones there either. Burr, burr, burr. Eager to make my call, I turned and hurried back outside. I let out a long sigh of relief when I spotted 2 payphones beside the long white dorm building. My heart pounding, I jogged over to them. I picked up the phone closest to me and started to raise the receiver to my ear when 2 strong hands grabbed me from behind. Get off the phone, a voice demanded.
Chapter 1 dozen.
Huh? I shrieked in surprise and dropped the phone. It spun crazily on its cord. I turned around. Deirdre, you scared me. me to death, I cried, her green eyes flash excitedly. Sorry, Wendy, I just had to tell you my news. Look! She held out her hand. I saw a stack of gold king coins. I just won my sixth coin, Deirdre declared breathlessly. Isn't that awesome? I guess, I replied uncertainly. I still couldn't figure out why it was such a big fucking deal. I'll be in the winner's walk tonight, Deirdre exclaimed. I can't believe I made it. That's great, I told her. Congratulations. Have you won any king's coins yet? Or king coins yet? Deirdre asked, still holding out her hand. Not yet, I replied. Well, get going, Deirdre urged. Show them what you've got, Wendy. Only the best. She flashed me a thumbs up with her free hand. Right, only the best, I repeated. We'll have a party, Deirdre continued, in our room right after the winner's walk. Okay, we'll celebrate. Great, I replied. Maybe we can get a pizza from the mess hall or something. Tell Jan and Ivy, Deirdre instructed. I'll tell them. Whoever sees them first, see you later. She ran off, holding the six gold coins tightly in her fist. I realized I was smiling. Deirdre had been so excited, she'd gotten me excited. So excited, I forgot about my phone call. Fucking idiot. I have to give this camp a chance, I decided. I have to get into the spirit of things and start having some fun. Only the best. I'm gonna win that tennis tournament. Oh, I gotta do my drink for pause. We all ate dinner at long wooden tables in a huge mess hall inside the main camp lodge. The long, high-ceilinged room seemed to stretch on forever. Loud voices and laughter echoed off the walls over the clatter of plates and silverware. Everyone had a story to tell. Everyone wanted to talk about the games of the day. After dinner, the counselors led us all to the running track. I searched for Elliot, but I couldn't find him in the crowd. It was a warm, clear night. A pale silver moon floated low over the darkening trees. As the sun set, the sky faded from pink to purple to gray. I love when there's just random parts where he's just like, oh, fuck, I haven't described anything for so long, and then just puts on an overly descriptive sentence. It's like, there, I've reached my adjective quota. When the darkness fell, I saw two flickering yellow lights at the far end of the track, moving toward me. As they came near, I could see that they were torches carried by two counselors. A blaring trumpet fanfare made us all grow quiet. I stepped closer to Jan, who stood at my side. "You're sure making a big deal of this," I whispered. "It is a big deal," Jan replied, her eyes straight ahead as the torches approached. "Do we have any food for the party later?" I whispered. Jan raised a finger to her lips. "Shh!" Several more torches had been lit. The yellow balls of light glowed like tiny suns. I heard a drum roll. Then a loud march blared from the loudspeaker. All trumpets and pounding drums. We stood in silence as the parade of torches passed by. And then, in the flickering yellow light, I saw faces. The faces of kids who had won their sixth king coin today. I counted eight kids, five boys, and three girls. Let me pull up the calculator. Yeah, that adds up. Their gold coins had been strung as necklaces around their necks. The coins caught the light of the torches and made the faces of the winners appear to glow as they marched by. Deirdre marched second in line. She seemed so happy and excited. Her coins jangled at her throat like Flava Flav. Her smile never faded. Jane and I waved and called to her, but she marched right the fuck past. A counselor's voice suddenly boomed over the loudspeaker. "Let's hear it for our winners who are taking their winner's walk tonight." A deafening cheer rose up from the kids watching the parade. We all clapped and shouted and whistled until the winners had marched past and the final torches had floated out of sight. "Only the best! Only the best!" the voice shouted over the speaker. "Only the best! Only the best!" we all chanted back. That ended the winner's walk parade. The lights came on. We all scrambled toward the dorms. The boys ran in one direction. The girls ran in another. And the boys ran with their erections. And the girls ran to not have the erections because of the penis. What? The torches were really cool, I said to Jan as we followed the crowd of girls down the path to the dorm. "I only need two more king coins," Jan replied. "Maybe I can win them tomorrow. Are you playing in the softball tournament?" Now, tennis, I told her. There are too many good tennis players, Jan replied. It'll be hard to win a coin. You should play softball, too.
Well, maybe, I replied.
Ivy was already waiting for us in the room.
Where's Deirdre?
She demanded as Jan and I entered.
We didn't see her. Probably hanging out with the other winners, I added.
Ah, God, that'd be cool to hang out with winners and not record bootleg audiobooks.
I found two bags of tortilla chips, but couldn't find any salsa, Ivy reported, holding up the bags.
Do we have anything to drink? I asked.
Ivy held up two cans of Diet Coke.
Now, do you have anything really to drink, bitch? Not Diet Coke.
Wow, great party, Jen exclaimed, laughing. Maybe we should invite some other girls in from the other rooms. I suggested.
No way. Then we'd have to share the Cokes.
Jen protested. We all laughed. The three of us joked and kidded around for about half an hour, waiting for Deirdre. We sat on the floor and opened one of the bags of tortilla chips. Without realizing it, we finished up the whole bag. Oh, no. Then we passed around one of the cans of soda.
Where is she?
Jan demanded, glancing at our watch.
It's nearly time for lights out,
Ivy sighed.
We won't have time for the party.
Maybe Deirdre forgot we're having a party, I suggested, crinkling up the tortilla chip bag and tossing it toward the trash basket. I missed. Basketball's definitely not my sport. But we found out last week that it was Dune sport because I like to hoop the shoop and do a little bit of between the legs around the world, play some horse, pass the rock to Rufio and all those things. I'm into basketball. It's my game.
But the party was her idea, Ivy replied, climbing to her feet and starting to pace back and forth.
Where can she be? Everyone is inside by now.
Let's go find her, I said.
The words just popped out of my mouth.
That happens to me sometimes. I get a bright idea, and before I know what I'm saying.
Yeah, let's...
I get a bright idea before I know what I'm saying. Yeah, just like I do with horrible pedophilia jokes, and I feel terrible whenever I hear them back.
Yes, let's go,
Ivy eagerly agreed.
Whoa, 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 hold it, Jan said, stepping in front of us, blocking our way to the door.
We're not allowed. You know the rules, Ivy. We're not allowed outside after 10.
We'll sneak out, find Deirdre, and sneak back in.
Ivy replied, come on, Jan. What could happen?
Right. What could happen?
I chimed in. Jan was outnumbered.
Okay, okay. But I hope we don't get caught, she muttered.
She followed Ivy and me to the door.
What could happen?
I asked myself, leading the way into the empty hall.
What could happen?
I repeated as we sneaked out the door into the night.
What could happen?
I didn't know, but the answer was... a lot.
R.L. Stein in italics.
Lucky chapter number 13.
The night had grown warmer and steamier. As I crept out the door, I felt as if we were stepping into a hot shower. A mosquito buzzed around my head. I tried to clap it between my hands.
Missed.
Oh, this is just describing Florida. Who would want to go to Florida ever for any reason? Jan and Ivy and I edged our way around the side of the building. My shoes slid on the dew-wet grass. Bright spotlight shone down from the trees, lighting the path. We crept in the shadows.
Where should we look first?
Ivy whispered.
Let's start at the lodge, I suggested.
Maybe all of tonight's winners are partying there.
I don't hear any partying, Jan whispered. There's not a single Andrew W.K. song playing anywhere. It's just quiet.
She was right. The only sounds I could hear were the steady chirps of crickets and the whisper of the warm wind through the trees. Keeping in the shadows, we followed the path toward the lodge. We passed through the swimming pool, empty and silent. The water shimmered like silver under the bright spotlights. It was such a hot, wet night. I imagined myself jumping into the pool with all my clothes on. But... we were on a mission to find Deirdre. No time to think about late-night swims. Staying close together, we passed the row of ping-pong tables. They made me think of Elliot. I wondered what he was doing. Probably tucked into bed, like any sensible person. Not reading Goosebumps. We were approaching the first row of tennis courts when Ivy suddenly cried out,
"Whoa, get back!"
She grabbed me and shoved me hard against the fence. I heard soft footsteps on the path. Someone
humming. The three of us held our breath as a counselor walked past, much like the three hobbits did, four hobbits, at the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring when the Nazgul was there. He had curly black hair and wore dark blue sunglasses, even though it was night. He wore the white t-shirt and white shorts that made up the counselor's uniform. We pressed our backs against the tennis court fence. "That's Billy," Jan whispered. "He's kind of cute. If you're into Jewish guys, he's always happy." "He won't be too happy if he catches us," Ivy whispered. "We'll be in major trouble." Humming to himself, snapping his fingers, Billy walked past us. The path curved around the other side of the tennis courts. I watched him until he disappeared. I took a long, deep breath. I hadn't been breathing the whole time. Where was he going? Ivy wondered, as Dune wondered why his cat was scratching the chair as he was trying to record some goddamn goosebumps. "Maybe he's going to the party at the lodge," I suggested. "Why don't we ask him?" Jan joked. "For sure," I muttered. Now the cat is on the back of my chair on the slight rest, scratching it and attacking Franklin. We checked out the path in both directions. Franklin! Both of you, Jesus. We checked out the path in both directions. Then we started walking again. We made our way past the tennis courts. The spotlights in the trees cast long shadows across the path. The shadows shifted and moved as the tree limbs bobbed in the wind. They looked like dark creatures crawling and slithering all over the ground. Despite the heat of the night, I shivered. It was kind of creepy walking over these moving shadows. I had the feeling one of them might reach up, grab me, and pull me down, like when Ash reads the wrong words in the end of Army of Darkness. I guess it's the middle, technically. Never mind. Weird thought, huh? I turned back in time to see the lights in the dorm window start to go out. Lights out. I tapped Jan on the shoulder. She turned and watched the dorm too. As the lights all went out, the building seemed to disappear in front of her eyes. It faded into the black of the night sky. "Maybe this wasn't such a good idea," I whispered. Ivy didn't reply. She bit her lower lip, her eyes darting around in the darkness. Jan laughed. "Don't wimp out now," she scolded. "We're almost to the lodge." We cut through the soccer field. The main lodge stood on a low, sloping hill, hidden by wide, old maple and sassafras trees. We didn't have to climb very far up the hill to see that the lodge was dark as the dorms. "No party up there," I whispered. Ivy sighed, disappointed. "Well, where could Deirdre be?" "We could try the boys' dorm," I joked. They both laughed. Our laughter was cut short by a loud, fluttering sound very close by. "What's that?" Ivy cried. "Oh!" I let out a moan as I raised my eyes and saw them. The sky was thick with bats. Dozens of black bats, fluttering over the spotlights in the old trees, and then swooping down to get us! As this was requested numerous times, I'm hoping it wasn't just because of the cover that was so memorable, but this is the final chapter of part one of this one, so let me just chug down the rest of my drink. Chapter 14. I couldn't help myself. I let out a scream. Then I shielded my face with both hands. I heard Jan and Ivy gasp. The fluttering grew louder, closer. I could feel the bat's hot breath on the back of my neck. Then I could feel them clawing at my hair, tearing at my face. It's probably a fucking improvement because I'm so ugly. I've got a real good imagination when it comes to bats. "Wendy, it's okay," Jan whispered. She tugged my hands from my face. She pointed. "Look." I followed her gaze up to the fluttering black wings. The bats were swooping low, but they weren't swooping at us. They were swooping down and landing on the swimming pool at the bottom of the hill. In the bright spotlights, I could see them dart into the water for less than a second and sweep back up to the sky. "I don't like bats," I whispered like a little bitch. "Neither do I," Ivy confessed. "I know they're supposed to be good. I know they eat insects and shit, but I think they're just creepy." "Well, they won't bother us," Jan said. "They're just taking a drink." She gave Ivy and me a push to get us started down the hill. We were lucky. Nobody had heard me scream. Oh my god, maybe they're in space. Take note of this, listeners. But we had only walked a few steps when we spotted another counselor coming down the path. I recognized her. She had straight, white blonde hair that tumbled down her waist from under a blue baseball cap. Without making a sound, all three of us dove behind a tall evergreen shrub and crouched down. Did she see us? I held my breath again. She kept walking. Where are these counselors going? Ivy whispered. Let's follow her, I suggested. Stay far back, Jan instructed. We slowly climbed back to our feet and stepped out from behind the shrub and stopped when we heard the low rumbling sound. As the rumbling grew louder, the ground began to shake. I caught the frightened expressions on my two friends' faces. Ivy and Jan were just as scared as I was. The ground shook harder, so hard that we dropped to our knees. I leaned on all fours, holding onto the grass. The ground trembled and shook. The rumbling became a roar. I was born during an earthquake. That's a stupid little fact about me. In the old July 13th of 1986 in San Diego. I shut my eyes. The sound slowly faded. The ground gave a final tremble, then remained still. I opened my eyes and turned to Ivy and Jan. They started to stand, slowly. I hate when that happens, Jan muttered. What is it? I whispered. I stood up on shaky legs and did the stanky leg. Nobody knows, Jan replied, brushing grass stains off her knees. It just happens a few times a day. I think we should give up on Deirdre, Ivy said quietly. I think Dune should give up on trying to pronounce her name. I want to go back to the dorm. Yeah, I'm with you, sister, I replied wearily. We can have our celebration with Deirdre tomorrow. She can tell us about where she was tonight and what she did, Jan said. This was a crazy idea, I muttered. It was your idea, Jan exclaimed. Most of my ideas are crazy, I replied. Hiding in the shadows, we made our way down to the path. I gazed toward the pool. The bats had disappeared. Maybe the rumbling sound had scared them back into the woods. The crickets had stopped chirping. The air remained hot, but silent and still. The only sound was the scrape of our sneakers on the soft, dry, dirt path. That wasn't dry because of the fucking rain that was previously happening. The scrape of the sneakers on the soft dirt path was what the sound was. And then, before we could move or hide, we heard someone else's footsteps. Rapid footsteps, running hard, running towards us. I stopped short when I heard a girl's desperate cry. Help me! Please, somebody help me! And that ends part one of the Horror at Camp Jelly Jam on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Hi, I'm Dune, everyone. I can be found on Twitter at Dune, Facebook .com/DuneReadsGoosebumps, email Dune@DuneReadsGoosebumps.com. DuneReadsGoosebumps.com has a donate link and shit. And, I'm still keeping at them just to spite people. Yeah. Yeah, getting these done. That being said, I have one instruction for you motherfuckers. You know what it is. Shut up, cat. Stay spooky, bitches. Oh, wait, no, the shut up cat wasn't part of it. The instruction was to stay spooky, bitches. Oh, God, let me do it one more time, sorry. Stay spooky, bitches.